Do you know over 5 million people across the globe have been trained in the American College of Surgeons Stop the Bleed program as of mid-2025? And, you know, this is a skill, honestly, that is pretty common, I would say, in comparison to like CPR. And it really empowers just the everyday person to know what to do in an emergency. And what's interesting is we are continuing to follow the coverage of what happened at Brown University, where a shooting happened, 2 students were killed, 9 others were injured. And let's focus on the victims, but also let's focus on the people who were there on campus. I think it's important that we, you know, like we were talking about the security measures on campus, but also just within ourselves, what could we be doing better to be more prepared for if God forbid, the unthinkable happens. Joining us to talk more about this is Dr. Shay Gregg, Chair of Surgery at St. Vincent's Medical Center, Chair of the Connecticut State Trauma Committee as well. And Dr. Gregg, thank you so much for giving us the time. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
So you've actually worked with a trauma team at Brown, correct?
Yes. So my first job out of fellowship back in 2008 to 2013, I had the pleasure of working under a very well-known chair in the world of trauma. His name is Dr. Bill Chaffee, and he recruited really just an incredible team of trauma surgeons there. And it grew over that time. You know, Providence and Rhode Island, unfortunately, did just have an increase in trauma overall. And with Rhode Island Hospital being the level one trauma center, namely the trauma center that had all the resources you need to take care of a injured patient, you know, we had to grow the team. And a lot of those team members are friends, colleagues that remain there today. And actually, we're taking care of those victims in Rhode Island.
Wow. Are you in touch with that team since what happened?
I have been. You know, there's a lot of things that happen during one of these horrible events. And the one thing that I think of as a trauma leader in the state and also in the local institution is, you know, there's support for the victims. There's support. I mean, there's an ongoing investigation. There's so much going on. But I also think of the hospital team that is actually receiving these horrendous situations is the reality. And I have been in touch with them. I've reassured saying that, you know, if they want to pick up the phone and talk to someone I just continue to, you know, shed light that there is additional victims from this. You know, we go home as care providers, and we take this home, and we have our kids and our families as support networks, but we also try to support each other. So, yes, I've been in touch with them. Yes, they're doing their best work, their absolute best work. And, you know, we're there as a community, a trauma provider community to support them.
So it's interesting because, Dr. Gregg, you said something before that I did not realize. So the hospital in Rhode Island is known as number one for trauma response?
So how it works is that the American College of Surgeons verifies trauma centers based on the level of resources that they are able to provide. And even though there's 4 designations, the college really, you know, deals with, you know, level 1, 2, 3 trauma centers. If you're a level 1 trauma center, you have all the resources necessary, subspecialties, equipment, et cetera, to manage a trauma of any kind, or a multiple or mass casualty incident. Level 2, you have most of the resources, if not all, but there may be a volume issue or, you know, there's other sort of like requirements to become a level 1. Level 3 is many times treat and transfer for the most severe traumas, but you can manage a fair amount of trauma. And 4 is very much a treat and transfer. So there's these different levels, but the Rhode Island Hospital is best equipped with the people, the equipment, and the knowledge base to take care of something like they just went through the tragedy in Providence there.
I think that's so interesting. I didn't realize that. So that's really cool. Now, my understanding, we've got Dr. Shay Gregg here, Chair of Surgery at St. Vincent's Medical Center, also the Chair of the Connecticut State Trauma Committee. My understanding is you kind of framed a similar response for the team here in Bridgeport based on Browns when it comes to, you know, responding to an event of mass casualty or, you know, a shooting if that were to occur in our area, correct?
Yes. We learn so much from these. In addition to, you know, taking care of the victims, every time there's a, you know, these sad tragedies that happen, and we learn from them. We turn them into opportunities to actually make our response better. Whether it was the Coconut Grove fire, back in, I believe it was the 30s or 40s, which was a horrible burn related incident, to the station fire where Rhode Island Hospital actually was in the center of receiving all of those victims, or being a primary triage site for those and management site. So they learned a lot about, you know, forming mini trauma teams, how you triage patients, how you manage multiple patients. And even though I wasn't there for the station fire, the people who were, they wrote about this, they developed it and included it in their emergency response plans. And, you know, as a person who practiced there, I basically adopted a lot of the principles that were learned during the station fire and during other events. And I have no doubt that they executed on their trauma response plan for a multiple or mass casualty incident. And we, you know, train, sim, prepare in a very similar way, because I brought that to with my colleagues and everybody else to Bridgeport and some of the other trauma hospitals within the Hartford healthcare system.
It seems like it's kind of a multi-prong approach, or I should say multi-department approach, Dr. Greg, because I would imagine you have to have kind of harmony between EMS, hospital workers, trauma team members. How do you get that synergy where you're all on the same page, especially when you're talking about, I mean, a mass shooting? Not that we should be preparing for that, but I mean, you know, it's happened. It does happen. And how do you kind of, you know, make sure when you're in this heightened place where everyone's in panic mode? I mean, everybody is just trying to kind of pick up the pieces and make sure that they can get as many people saved or taken care of as possible. How do you create a synergy between all those different departments?
I think that is the eternal question. And the way that we approach this is education and simming, making sure that it's a multi-collaborative approach as we prepare for these events. If you remember, yes, there was a multiple shooting or mass casualty shooting just up the street, and actually, this is the anniversary of it on the 14th. So there was that, and plus there was the train crash that occurred a few years ago that required the care of multiple patients. In addition to, you know, making sure that field triage tries to split between the two hospitals in Bridgeport, but there's also just we go through the exercise and we come up with scenarios where we simulate these multiple and mass casualty incidents, and we make sure that we include the pre-hospital care providers, police, we include our in-hospital care providers, we include aeronautical transport, whether it's, you know, the helicopter system or whatnot, to get patients out who might have different resources, et cetera, or requirements. So the key is to achieve that harmony. It's all about communication. It's all about training together. And training in the most realistic situations as possible. Namely, we recently had a training exercise here where everyone was in full makeup, where we received dozens and dozens and dozens of patients that just kept going due to a simulated situation. And we had pre-hospital care involved. We had public safety. We had so many resources available in addition to the in-hospital care. So what we do is sim together, learn each other's names, really try to build up that partnership, brotherhood, sisterhood, et cetera. And then it has to be seamless as much as it can be at the time of event, should it ever happen.
We're talking to Dr. Shay Gregg, who is the chair of surgery at St. Vincent's Medical Center. He's also the chair of the Connecticut State Trauma Committee. And, you know, I want to talk about Stop the Bleed, because I know this program kind of aims to make life-saving skills more common, like CPR has become. And even there, we're not quite where we should be. But following what happened at Brown University, where that shooting claimed the lives of two students, left nine others injured, let's talk about the importance of having that skill. Because whether it's on a college campus or you're just out in the community and things happen, unfortunately, violence erupts, You know, in your professional opinion, Dr. Greg, how important is stop the bleed?
I think you actually you frame things very, very well at the opening of this interview, where it has to be thought of as CPR, as a skill set that people feel empowered to be able to make an intervention should they see something happen in front of them. You know, the way that we approach things when it comes to any sort of, you know, bleeding emergency is, one, make sure yourself is you yourself is safe. And then, two, you can actually consider and if you have the appropriate training and or equipment, which can be honestly a variety of things if you don't have the, you know, the stop the bleed kit per se, to make an intervention. Because that intervention can be life-saving, especially if you are bleeding from a major, you know, a major vessel or, you know, something that is really significant at the time. We have to remember, though, that Stop the Bleed was not made specifically for multiple casualty incidents where there's guns involved or there's stabbings involved. It is something that people can actually respond to and be empowered to respond to during the time of those events, but that only makes up a small amount of injuries that we see in the trauma centers. Really, the shop accidents where there might be an injury due to a saw blade, or there is even motor vehicle crashes, or other sort of instances. Though that's when you know, people can feel empowered, can see, first of all, recognize a problem, namely life-threatening hemorrhage or bleeding, and then actually make an intervention based on that, whether it's through tourniquets, wound packing, et cetera. And if we teach it like CPR, then I really think we'll empower the public and make them feel a lot more comfortable intervening. And fortunately, the state legislature as well agreed with this concept and passed legislation where bleeding control education will be rolled out to schools, municipalities, et cetera, but also that hemorrhage control kits will be installed in public places over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, et cetera. But it's really an empowering skill that I think we all should be able to learn. And it's so easy to learn. It takes 45 minutes to an hour minimal, and it should be thought of as like CPR.
Yeah, I think it should too. I mean, I'm kind of sitting here going over if there was a way to, I mean, especially for, I mean, not kids. I understand like that's kind of daunting for children, but you know, I feel like no matter what age you are, there's nothing like having a certificate up on the wall saying that I'm, you know, I'm certified in this, this, and this. But if there was some kind of a course that you took over 5 weeks and one time you do CPR, one time you do stop the bleed, I have to imagine there's multiple things that we could all be learning. I mean, Narcan is another one that I think people, you know, it probably is very easy to use. But the importance of why you carry Narcan and how, you know, or even if somebody is choking, the importance of knowing how to get, you know, do the Heimlich or to get, you know, food dislodged from the throat. I feel like there are simple skills that are, as you mentioned, Dr. Greg, life-saving. And not that I want it to be curriculum, because you never want to force stuff on people. But I mean, in a world that feels very unknown and people feel like they're losing more and more control, this to me makes you feel more empowered and makes you feel like you can handle any situation, even if it's, you know, again, just the worst kind of trauma. I don't know. I just think it gives you a better mindset going into, you know, everyday life and whatever it throws at you.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we have to remember that, you know, Stop the Bleed was really built for, okay, the incident happened or the, you know, the accident, the crash, the whatever happened. And that's really a responsive sort of preparation. In addition to, you know, the management of a lot of these incidents, there are also, we have to think of how can we best prevent them from a public health standpoint as well. I think you actually described it very well. We do have a very uncertain world, arguably more uncertain than it ever has been. But you know, in order to get in front of these things, we also have to think of the preventative measures. And I'm very excited to report that the Department of Public Health just awarded Bridgeport a gun violence prevention grant that we will be meeting for the first time actually today. To really sort of talk about strategies, techniques, et cetera, and resources within the city of Bridgeport to ask the question, how can we best prevent something, you know, like what happened in Brown or in Australia, et cetera, but also just like, you know, individual, you know, gun violence related incidences as well. So if we can attack this from a preventative aspect as well as a reactive aspect, then I think that we can empower a lot of communities and people in the community to potentially just prevent or deal with these things.
I just think, you know, it's kind of cliche, Dr. Greg, but I really do believe that knowledge is power. And the more that we equip ourselves with knowing things, it also just kind of changes our mind and our focus because, you know, why learn the skills of stop the bleed or CPR or any of the things we just talked about? And, you know, you learn them because you just don't know what is going to happen, what you're going to see at a restaurant or what you're going to see at a shop or, you know, whatever the case may be. And I think when you realize that those skills could come into play at any time, it also morphs the way that you think, you know, when you're out in public, not to get distracted, to, you know, be able to identify your exits, to be able to spot not normal, to, you know, see something, say something, like all the things that we want people to do, but life is just too chaotic and busy for us to do it. But if you equip yourself with these skills, I feel like you're also more inclined to be a more proactive witness or bystander. I don't know if you agree, but.
Yeah, I firmly agree. And honestly, it's words like that, getting the word out. It's, you know, the advocacy behind this program in particular, and just making people aware this could happen. We can't live in fear. That's one thing that I have to, you know, really stress. We cannot say, if I go in and I go shopping for this holiday season, will there be a multiple casualty?
No, like that's crazy.
Odds are that chances are no. Please. That's definitely not the point of these courses, but it at least will, you know, sit in your brain if you took the actual course, and it'll be there and will be hopefully, you know, at the ready in the event that you need to be that active bystander in a safe situation. Always, I want to stress that. Make sure that the situation is safe. Don't put yourself in harm's way.
Exactly.
But be there so you can intervene.
Right. I think it brings empowerment, not fear, in my personal opinion. The more that I've you know, gotten certified in things or I've done more in crime prevention, I think it really does empower you and it makes you feel more in control than fearful, to be honest. Dr. Greg, I so appreciate your insight and thank you so much for sharing all of this here as we continue to follow the investigation out of Brown University. Thank you so much.